The following message is brought to you by MacArthur Boulevard Baptist Church. We are many stories made one family by one gospel. If you would like to connect with us, please check out our website at MacArthurBoulevard.org.
You know, I've noticed that when I'm just in casual conversation with people, and, you know, what the question you typically ask people on a Sunday morning in particular when you see them, the common question is, well, how was your week? And I've noticed that probably the most common response to that question in casual conversation is, it was good, it was fine. A close second most common response to the question, how was your week, I have observed is, man, it was a busy week. It was a really, really busy week. And you know, here's the thing, you talk to the same person the next week and say, how was your week? And lo and behold, guess what? That was another really busy week. And I'm the same way. That's probably, I have found in myself answering that question, people ask, how was your week? Probably the answer I give most frequently is, man, that was just a really busy week. And I've learned that as people, we are normally abnormally busy. I remember when I was in college thinking to myself, this is as busy and as stressed as I have ever been in my life, trying to balance work and school and, you know, our social networks, as busy as I've ever been. And then I get married, I have kids, and I have these young kids, these infants, these babies. I think to myself, nope, this is as busy and as exhausted as I've ever been. I can't wait until the next season. And I'm in the next season now. I got teenagers now. And guess what? I feel like this is as busy and crazy and exhausting as life has ever been. And you know what? I'll talk to some of you. Some of you are retired. And I'll say, how's retirement? And you know what you'll tell me? That's as busy as I've ever been. And I'm thinking, is this just life? I've concluded, you know, like the author of Ecclesiastes, I've looked at this, I've observed this, and I've concluded that whatever season you're in, you should probably stop looking to the next season to bring you the rest that you want. You know, this longing for rest that we have goes all the way back to the very beginning. It goes all the way back to the book of Genesis. Ever since sin entered the world, causing creation to produce thorns and thistles, there has been a deeply seated restlessness that has pervaded humanity. And you know, as you're reading along in Genesis, you come to the end of chapter 5 of Genesis, and you read about a guy named Lamech, and he fathers a son. And you know what he calls his son? I'm going to call him Noah. You see, in Hebrew, the word Noah sounds very similar to the Hebrew word for rest. And he said, I'll tell you why I'm going to call my son Noah. This is what Lamech says. He says, out of the ground that the Lord has cursed, this one, Noah, this man of rest, Noah, shall bring us rest from our work and from the painful toil of our hands. You see, the hope in Genesis 5 was that this Noah, this man of rest, would restore, would recover the rest that was lost in Eden. He kind of did, at least temporarily. We know how this story goes. God flooded the earth and removed the wickedness from the earth, and there was a temporary restfulness that was restored on earth. But then, as you keep reading, you discover that Noah was not the man of rest we hoped he would be, was he? He got drunk. He was a man that had his own weird family drama. The restlessness of humanity continues forth from his family that begins to repopulate the world. And it doesn't take long in Genesis before you realize that humanity is still longing for a true Noah, a true man of rest. So today we're going to return to Exodus 16. It's already been read for us. We're going to look at the second half of chapter 16, looked at the provision of manna in the first half. Last Sunday, this Sunday, look at the second half, this call to rest on the seventh day. And we're going to find in Exodus 16 here the solution to the restlessness that has plagued humanity from the beginning. And maybe, just maybe, it is a restlessness that you carry in your own soul even today. Okay? So, reset the context. We're in the wilderness of sin in Exodus chapter 16, and the people are complaining again. They're grumbling again, this time because they don't have enough food to eat. And so what does God do in response to their grumbling? He graciously provides them with a substance called manna, which appeared on the ground throughout the camp every single morning when they got up. And we were told, we saw this last Sunday, we were told that he, through this provision of manna, was testing Israel. He was testing his people. He was testing their faith. Will they learn to trust God to provide for them? Well, they learn to trust God to care for them. And so in order to test their faith through this manna, he gives them two specific instructions on how to gather the manna. The first instruction is what we kind of focused on last Sunday. The first instruction was, you are not to store up any leftovers of this manna. You take what you need for one day, you eat a one-day supply, you don't try to keep it, store it for leftovers the next day, because you're trusting that I'm going to provide what you need for the next day, the next day. By the way, entirely counterintuitive for an agrarian society, whose entire livelihood was built upon harvesting a crop during the season, because they knew winter was coming. So what do? You harvest and you store so that you have what you need whenever the ground stops producing food. That was their mentality. And God said, no, not with my manna. No storing. Because he was teaching them to trust him for their daily provision. He says, don't trust your storehouses. Don't trust your storage systems. Trust me. Okay, he was testing their faith. Now, he gave them a second instruction in chapter 16, again, to test their faith. It's our focus for today. He said in verse 5 of chapter 16 that on the sixth day, they were supposed to gather not a one-day supply, but a two-day supply. Because on the sixth day, he was going to give them twice as much manna as on the previous days. The reason for that is given in verse 23. He reveals to the Israelites that the seventh day of the week was to be a Sabbath to the Lord. That is a day of rest. I don't want you gathering and cooking on your day of rest. So you are to prepare for the seventh day on the sixth day. By gathering what you'll need for the seventh, cooking what you'll need for the seventh, so that on the Sabbath day, you can rest. You can pause from your labor. Again, this instruction to rest on the seventh day tested their faith. Will they trust him? Would they trust God enough to take a day off and to rest on the seventh day? And as you're reading along in the narrative, you realize on the second instruction, they started off really strong. Like, when it came to doing what God said to do and gathering twice as much as what they needed on the sixth day, check, crush that one. You know, we've been eager to gather more than a day's supply anyway. So they gathered a two-day supply on the sixth day. And they were also pleased that when they stored the provision for the seventh day overnight, and they get up on the morning of the seventh day, they were pleased that, unlike the previous days when they tried to store it overnight, man, this stuff was clean. It hadn't rotted. It hadn't bred worms, right? So far, so good. They gather what they need twice as much on the sixth day. They store it. So far, so good. But then we get to verse 27. And we're told in verse 27 that, again, they failed to follow the instruction of God. Because even though God had provided already the food that they needed for that seventh day, they got up and saw it's still here, it's good, it doesn't have worms, it's good. Still, there were some people who went out, just like the previous days, and they went out looking to gather more manna on the Sabbath day, on the seventh day. They simply did not trust God enough to stop working. Okay. So what does God say to them? Go to verse 28. The Lord said to Moses, "How long will you refuse to keep my instructions?" He goes on to explain, "Understand that the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, on the sixth day, he will give you 2 days' worth of bread. Each of you stay where you are. No one is to leave his place on the seventh day." So we're told, eventually they got it, and the people rested on the seventh day. He has to correct them again. He's teaching them, he's training them. You got to trust me to take the seventh day off. We're then told as the chapter unfolds that God instructed Moses to store an omer of this manna for future generations as a visible sign to future generations that God was faithful to provide for his people after he redeemed them out of Egypt. Of course, the current generation wasn't the generation that needed the sign because they experienced the manna every day. You know, they had the manna every morning. In fact, verse 35 tells us for 40 years until they arrived at the promised land, every morning God provided this manna. It didn't stop until they inherited the land God had promised them. But God wanted some stored and kept for future generations. And so he causes, miraculously, this omer of manna to be preserved for generations to come, memorializing it in order to demonstrate that he's faithful. He's trustworthy. Right? We can trust the provision of God. We know eventually manna is going to be kept in a chest called the Ark of the Covenant. Has not been built yet in Exodus 16. It will be built. It's going to be stored there along with two other items. Bible trivia. What are the other two items in the Ark of the Covenant beyond the manna? You know what that sounded like to me? I'm sure y'all got the answers right. The Ten Commandments and the budded rod. I think I heard that. The budded rod of Aaron stored in the Ark of the covenant. But Exodus 16, right here, this is the first directive, the first command for Israel to obey the Sabbath, to keep the Sabbath holy. Okay, let's talk about the word Sabbath for a moment. Sabbath. Sabbath is a word that simply means a stoppage, to cease, to desist. It refers to ceasing from one's labor, to take a day off in order to rest. Now remember what they're coming out of, the Israelites. Rest was not an option for them back in slavery, right? Slaves don't get a day off. The life of slavery is a life that is marked by constant work, labor, production. But what we're seeing in the series through Exodus is that God is saving Israel out of a domain that is marked by labor and production, and he's bringing them into a new domain that is marked by rest and receiving from the Lord, because they are by identity no longer slaves of Pharaoh. Their identity has now changed, and they're living as the sons of God, the sons and daughters of God. But, I mean, we've walked with Israel long enough. We know it's taking some time for them, right, to break free from that old slave mentality of anxious, fearful labor, and to actually embrace this gift of rest that God is giving them. Okay, so God is calling Israel to trust him enough to observe this day of rest, the Sabbath day. He was testing their faith, even in how he is distributing the manna. He's testing them. Now, we know, or if you're familiar with the story of the Exodus, you know, the Sabbath is going to be one of the Ten Commandments, keeping the Sabbath holy, one of the Ten Commandments that God is later going to give to Israel, which speaks to its significance for the people. In fact, as the law is later given, it's going to be, breaking the Sabbath is going to be considered a capital offense. It'll cost you your life. Under the Mosaic law, if you break this commandment. So it's a big deal to God. This issue of Sabbath rest, it's important. It's significant for him. Now, what we're seeing here in Exodus 16 is, though, the Sabbath command was actually given before the law was given, right? The law's not going to be given. Even the Ten Commandments, the foundation, for another four chapters. Before the law, preceding the law, is this instruction toward Sabbath rest. In fact, if you are an astute reader of the Bible, you'll know that this idea of Sabbath rest actually precedes the book of Exodus altogether, doesn't it? You got to go back even earlier to find the origins of this idea of Sabbath to the creation week. For in 6 days God created the heavens and the earth, but he Sabbathed. He rested on the seventh day. Now, why did God do it that way? Is it, you know, construction projects always take longer than what you're planning? Is that the issue? Yeah, he just couldn't get it done earlier. He's hoping to get it done in 3 days, but some, you know, things were on back order. No. It wasn't because he couldn't have created the earth sooner than that. He did it to model this principle, this pattern of Sabbath rest, right, for his people. And so it raises the question, questions that I'm sure even right now you're wrestling with. Well, what does that mean for us today? We're not under the law today. How should Christians, New Covenant, this side of the cross, how should Christians think about the Sabbath today? Do we obey this commandment? Do we obey it in the same way in which Israel obeyed the commandment? How should the people of God in the New Covenant think about keeping the Sabbath? I think it's a really important question. In fact, I think it's really relevant for our culture. This idea of Sabbath rest. It's so important. As I was studying this last week, just kind of praying through this message, I really felt prompted to slow down. And so we're actually going to spend 2 weeks on this issue, of at least two. If I get back up here next Sunday and say we've got one more, then we'll have at least one more. But we're going to spend a couple weeks unpacking this question of how do the people of God today, what do we do, how do we think about this issue of Sabbath rest. I want to kind of treat it in two parts, all right? Part one is I want to make sure that we understand the substance of the Sabbath, the substantive point God was intending to make when he instituted the command to rest on the seventh day. So we're going to look at the substance of the Sabbath today. And the next Sunday, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about practice. How do we live out the principles of Sabbath today? But if you jump to those questions, which are the questions you probably are immediately thinking of, if you jump to the questions of, you know, well, what do we do with this today, without understanding the substance of the Sabbath, you're going to mess up. And you're going to fall into all kinds of different traps and dangers. And so today, this is the question. What's the substance of the Sabbath? What's the point? What was and is the point of this commandment to keep the Sabbath day holy? What was he trying to convey and teach his people? What was he intending to say? To answer that question, we need to step back a little bit from Exodus 16. And consider a little bit more holistically the breadth of what the Bible says and how the Bible treats this issue of Sabbath. See it in the overall narrative of the Bible. These are the kind of questions, by the way, the early Christians, the early church, the first century church had to really wrestle with. As the gospel was extending further and further into Gentile territory, the question of what do we do with some of these Old Testament laws and traditions and regulations? What do we do when the gospel reaches these people who didn't grow up with these traditions? What do we do about circumcision? What do we insist that these Gentiles are circumcised? What do we do about these dietary rules and regulations? What do we do about the Sabbath? Do we require them to keep the Sabbath? They're not accustomed to a day off. Do we impose that upon them? These are questions that the earliest Christians had to wrestle with, and we actually see some of their wrestling with it in the words of the New Testament inspired by God, given for our instruction today. Can I point out a couple of New Testament texts that are really important for us to think about the substance of the Sabbath? The first is Colossians chapter 2. If you want to make your way there, you can. I don't typically have you lead the primary text, but this is one of those Sundays that it might be helpful to make your way over to Colossians chapter 2. Because Paul actually is dealing with this question as Jew and Gentiles are coming together in the same church in Colossae. And this is what he says in verses 16 and 17. Colossians 2, 16 and 17. Paul says, therefore, don't let anyone judge you in regard to food and drink or in the matter of a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath day. These are a shadow of what was to come. The substance is Christ. That's such an important statement. Let's talk about it. Paul is acknowledging these Jewish and Gentile Christians, they're going to have different convictions regarding the practice of the Sabbath. And he warns them here. It's a warning that we'll talk more about next Sunday. I think it's an important warning. He says, don't pass judgment. Be careful not to pass judgment on your brothers and your sisters whose consciences are different, whose convictions are different on what, you know, what the Sabbath should or should not be and how it should or should not be practiced. So don't pass judgment, he says, on these matters related to Christian conscience. But the more foundational statement he makes, which is what I want to focus on today, is that he calls the Sabbath specifically a shadow. A shadow. A shadow is a form. It is the form of a person, the outline of a person on the ground or on the wall. It's kind of like the reflection of a person. When you look at someone's shadow, you're not looking at the person, him or herself. You're looking at the form of that person. And Paul is saying here that the Sabbath was simply the shadow of a person whose name is Jesus. He says, the substance is Christ. You say, well, that's an interesting observation, great Apostle Paul. Where did you get that from? I believe he got it from the teachings of Jesus that was passed on to him and already being codified in the Gospels. At the very end of Matthew chapter 11, all right, Jesus has a moment where he looks out at the crowds, and you'll recognize maybe these words. He says, you know, all you who are weary and heavy laden, he says, come to me, and I will give you what? Rest. He promises, I offer rest for your soul. That's how chapter 11 in Matthew's gospel ends. Very end of chapter 11. This is where the chapter divisions in our New Testament aren't always super helpful. Those are added later, and they're helpful, you know, as you're finding your way around these long, you know, books. But there's a chapter division there. But you know what? How, like, the very first phrase of chapter 12? He says, Matthew, at that time, and then he tells a story. It's the Sabbath controversy that Jesus and his disciples had with the Pharisees, because they're walking through this grain field and they're hungry, and they take some heads of grain and they eat it, and the Pharisees get all up in arms. You're harvesting a crop on the Sabbath. You're not allowed to do that. And that's the controversy where at the end, I think it's verse 8 of chapter 12, Jesus says, guess what, guys? I am the Lord of the Sabbath. I am the one who will give you rest. You already see a hint in Jesus' teaching that the Sabbath was never ultimately about a day of the week. It's a shadow. The Sabbath was ultimately about a Lord, a person. You see, ever since Eden, humanity has suffered from a deep spiritual restlessness. This restlessness is exactly what characterized Israel's life in slavery. Do you remember, it's been a few months, do you remember the refrain of Exodus chapter 5? The refrain of slavery was, more bricks, more bricks, more labor, more work, more production. You see, in slavery, you can never produce enough to rest from your work, your toil, your labor. That was a life of slavery. In fact, dadgummit, that was what Pharaoh was so afraid of when God sent Moses into the land of Egypt. You remember what he said? What was he upset about? I'll quote him himself. This is Pharaoh, Exodus 5:5. He looks at Moses. He says, you make them rest from their burdens. This is what he was afraid of, this rest. Slavery is a life of restlessness. But now that God has redeemed Israel out of that life of slavery, what he's doing here in Exodus 16 is he's giving them a weekly shadow, a weekly example, a weekly model or pattern of a rest that God wants to offer his people. Okay. And when you look at it in the breadth of the narrative of the Bible, you learn, particularly in the Gospels, that this gift of Sabbath rest was never intended ultimately just to be a day of the week. The day of the week was significant, but it was a shadow. The rest, the Sabbath rest that God offers, is a person. He's the true Noah. He's the man of rest, or he's the Lord of the Sabbath. The substance of Sabbath rest is Jesus. One author put it this way. I thought this was a helpful way to state it. He's reflecting on the Sabbath controversy in Matthew 12 in the grain field. He says, a spiritually attentive Israelite always knew that soul deep rest came not from the Sabbath itself, but from the Sabbath's Lord. Sabbath rest was a stream in time, but God himself was the fountain. He says, follow the stream of the Sabbath, Pharisees. Walk along its banks through the centuries, past Sinai, past Egypt, past even creation week. And what you will find is not a day, but a Lord. He says, a Lord now standing in a grain field. What I want you to know today is that Jesus alone can bring rest to your restless souls. And what we're seeing here in Exodus chapter 16 is God's trying to teach his people that if you trust me, if you have faith in me, if you'll just trust me, you can have rest. You can receive rest. And the rest that God offers is not just a day of the week, it is a person. If you're taking notes this morning, I encourage you to write this down. Here's the idea that I want you to take home. Okay. It's this: true rest is only found by trusting in the Lord of rest. Okay, true rest is only found by trusting in the Lord of rest. And so however you think about practicing Sabbath in your own life today, you have to begin with this point. You have to start here. This is the substance of the Sabbath, okay? Listen, we must be careful not to reduce the Sabbath merely to a stoppage of work on a particular day of the week, and because we stopped working on that day of the week, call it Sabbath rest. We Sabbathed because we stopped working on this day, reducing it to just a day, or reducing it to just a stoppage of work. Okay? True Sabbath rest is deeper than just the stoppage of work. It's only found in Jesus. And guys, we'll talk next week a lot more about the healthy principles of taking a break and pausing and resting. But you've got to get this point, because our hearts are hardwired toward idolatry in so many ways. We take the good gifts of God and we twist it. It's so relevant for our culture because we live in a, listen, we live in a self-care culture. Okay? Like what I'm talking about, I don't want to paint with too broad of a brush. I am a millennial, and so if just understand that the whole generational theory thing certainly has flaws. It's too general, but this message really resonates with my generation. Self-care. You got to take care of yourself, man. And some of that is a reaction to previous generations, you know who you are, who worked yourself into the ground, burned yourself out. And so we've substituted that life with this other life of self-care. And so we have employers that give us not just vacation days, but mental health days, right? Because I've got to take care of me. I've got to care about me. It's a culture of self-care. It's trendy to talk today. This is in vogue. It's trendy to talk today about taking a break, taking a day for you, me time. I'm not saying all that's bad. In fact, we're going to see next week that a lot of that is really good and important. Okay. I'm saying that self-care is a poor substitute for the Sabbath rest that is offered in the gospel of Jesus Christ. Okay. It's like grilling a portobello mushroom and calling it a steak. It looks similar. You know, it's going to leave you hungry and dissatisfied. Substituting self-care for the rest that Jesus is talking about, that the Bible's talking about. Okay, let me put it this way. I want to talk kind of both sides here. I want to talk to the millennials. I want to talk to the baby boomers out there, okay? Without Jesus, your rest will be restless. An infinite amount of days off for self-care will not cure the restlessness of your soul. Okay, the flip side is also true. Without Jesus, your work will become a desperate, anxious, fearful attempt to secure for your soul the rest, the approval, the security, the sense of fulfillment, the rest your soul longs for. Okay? It is a restless soul that causes us to work ourselves into the ground. Okay? So, neither the sluggard who works for the weekend, nor the workaholic who has no weekend, has learned to enjoy the rest of the true Sabbath. True rest is only found by trusting in the Lord of rest. So, unpack that just a little bit more. There are two potential dangers here. There are two potential twin idols here that we can gravitate toward. The first danger, the first idol is the idol of work. We can make an idol out of work, where we are looking to our work, our labor, to bring us a sense of fulfillment that only God can give you. Okay? And this happens when you find your identity in work. When you're seeking through your work to prove yourself worthy, to prove yourself as a person, you're tying your sense of worth to your work. And so when you do that, you find your identity in your work, everything else in your life takes a back seat to your work. Work reigns supreme over your family, over your relationship with God, over your life. We know plenty of people who have made an idol out of their work because they're seeking for a rest that can only be found in Jesus, but they're looking for it in work. Okay. There's a twin idol. And this is why you got to understand the substance of the Sabbath, or else you'll fall into this twin idol. You'll avoid that idol. Okay, I need to take a break from work. There's a twin idol. It is the idol of physical rest. Okay? What I mean is, if you think what your soul ultimately needs is simply taking a break, so what you're hoping in, what you're looking toward for hope is the weekend, is the vacation, is retirement, is the next season of life when things finally slow down, and my hope's there, then you are looking for physical rest to do something for you. You are looking for another circumstance or season of life to do something for you that only God can do. Okay. When we make an idol out of what I'll call me time, when we make an idol out of me time, then our me time will inevitably suffocate our communion with and worship of God. And this is the danger of substituting the idol of work with the idol of me time, because now you are at the center of the Sabbath. You know, every time the Bible talks about the Sabbath, you know what it calls it? It doesn't call it your Sabbath. It calls it the Lord's Sabbath. We'll talk about that more next week. It's not your Sabbath. You're not at the center of it. It's not me time. That's not the point. That's a substitute. But if you settle for the substitute, then the substitute's going to actually suffocate the purpose of Sabbath, which is the enjoyment of God. So we can make an idol of both our work or our physical rest. In either instance, that idolatry is rooted in a lack of faith. That's the root of the issue that Israel is having here in Exodus 16. They didn't trust God enough to keep the Sabbath holy. We either don't trust God enough to rest from our work, or we don't trust that God is the rest our souls long for when we do take a break from work. It's rooted in a faith issue, a trust issue, which is why we must believe that true rest is only found by trusting in the Lord of the Sabbath. I simply want to ask you this morning, for today, my question is, does your soul need rest today? Do you need rest? And maybe you're a follower of Christ. Many of you are followers of Christ, but you've neglected perhaps to find true rest in Jesus. Perhaps you're recognizing even in your own life an idolatry of work or an idolatry of physical rest. And you're not enjoying the restfulness that is found in Christ. Okay? So if that's where you're at, the response is to turn away from the substitute. Turn away from the idol. Repent. Turn away from that. If the idol is work, turn away from allowing work to reign supreme in your life. Trust God to provide for you, to provide what you need. If the idol is, you know, physical rest, the next season when things finally slow down, then embrace a change of mind that has you at the center of your rest, and recognize that having more me time isn't the answer. Okay. Don't anchor your hope just to a different season of life. I want you to know that Jesus has something better for you. You can renew your soul and enjoy the rest of Jesus in whatever season you're in, whatever circumstance that you're in. The rest he offers is not bound to some golden age of retirement year. I can't enjoy this rest until I get the kids out of the house, or these babies grow up, or I get out of college. Okay. That's a frame of mind that you can turn away from today. What I need is Jesus. What I need is Jesus. If you're not a follower of Jesus, and some of you aren't, I want you to know that the restlessness of your soul will never be satisfied through the stuff of this world. Whether that be achievement, I want to achieve all of my goals and dreams. Whether that be a particular lifestyle, I want to acquire a certain lifestyle, or whether that even be religion. I got to find the right philosophy of religion, and that'll bring me rest. No. I want you to know that God has provided for you a way to receive rest for your restless soul. But in order to receive that rest, you must trust his provision. The rest of the Lord comes through a person, his son. His name is Jesus. And if you will come to him today, and you'll give your life to him, you'll surrender and trust him and follow him, he will give rest to your soul. He may not change all of your circumstances. He may not change much of your circumstances. He'll give you something so much better than different circumstances. He'll give you rest. True rest is only found by trusting in the Lord of rest. So if you are burdened and heavy laden, come to him today. And he will give you rest.